You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. All right, Dave has gone to extensive lengths to come up with Sextravaganza.
What's that say, Bob? The headline here?
SF Sack Experience or Sextravaganza.
I think we're going with Sextravaganza.
I also like turning my button on here, Dave. I'm excited for this segment here.
It's not that exciting, Jim. I told you shouldn't do research. No, it really nets. You know, and I thought this was going to be indicative of something, and at the end I did put all this time in, and it really didn't mean anything at all.
You didn't come away with any hard and fast conclusions?
No, there's good stuff here.
Well, can you recap Sextravaganza part one?
Part one, I was just going to do that, Jim. The Seahawks, because we talk about sacks and how meaningful they are and what kind of plays that they are for the team, and especially when you get to the 49ers. And I went to the 49ers just because, man, for a while there, they were just on a roll. They were getting four sacks a game. They really tailed off at the end. But we'll get to that. The Seahawks, though, if you weren't listening yesterday, they had 28 sacks on the year. Out of those 28 sacks, they got one defensive touchdown, six fumble recoveries, one drive that ended in an interception, one that ended the game that was in Arizona, one that was over on downs against San Francisco, two missed field goals, seven punts, and then yielded seven field goals. So, and zero touchdowns on those drives. And so this is why I've said that sacks are a drive killer. And especially when you look at, for whatever reason, the Niners, my gosh, they had so many 10, 11-yard sacks. But it's just, you know, how this works out, it's not necessarily tied to, you know, winning. I think when I went through and looked at it, that, you know, there were some teams that had lots of sacks. But, you know, for this team, what that means, I just think it's huge. And that we have kind of, even the 12 sacks that you got, I mean, you got a pretty good chance of at least getting a punt, and you're getting off the field. And there's a lot of times where they couldn't get off the field. So that's, to me, it's a huge, but I think seven out of the top 10 teams that led the league in sacks were in the playoffs. So it's not like turnover ratio, but it's still very indicative, and it's indicative of a really good defense. So, cause you have to cover too. You have to cover and you have to, you know, have pass rushers.
Yeah, there's no doubt that was a problem for this team throughout the season, and it puts your cornerbacks on your whole secondaries on an island out there. Yeah. They got to cover what feels like forever, right? And you can only do that for so long. You're talking about the best athletes on the field, and you're supposed to sit there and cover them. If you've got a really good quarterback, they're going to pick you apart every single time.
Yeah, I mean, if you give them over 5 seconds, I mean, there's time to get open. And I don't care how good of a coverage guy, as you just said. So anyway, I went and looked at San Francisco and the reason why they're in the division, and just because they were on that roll there for a while. But they ended up with 48 sacks, so they had 20 sacks more than the Seahawks. But what it came up with for them, they actually had three opponent touchdowns on drives where they had a sack, and the Seahawks only didn't have any. But they had three. And the thing that I've noticed on these touchdown drives, and same thing for the Seahawks, if you go to the playoffs and look, the Seahawks got a sack. It was Clowney and KJ got a sack, but it was for 0 yards. So, I mean,
yeah, why do they count those as sacks when it's...
No. I guess because the quarterback, if he's not past the line of scrimmage, you know...
Seems like you should have to lose at least a half a yard before it counts as a sack.
Yeah, because they give out half a sack, but they're only dealing in yards. Maybe we'll get more sophisticated later on, and that will be... You know, sacks weren't counted until, like, 1982, I think.
Yeah, and that really did a number on guys like Deacon Jones and all the old-school players where you're saying, well, if you added up all theirs, they'd be well over 200.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember getting sacks in high school and it wasn't a thing. Like nobody talked about it, so it was just kind of strange. But yeah, they're a huge play, and for them, the San Francisco 49ers, they were number 5 in the league with those 48 sacks. But here's what it yielded for them: two field goals, and I mentioned the three touchdowns. So of those 48, that's what they got on these drives. Four downs that led to end of game, or downs that four times that you know, they turned it over on downs.
Mm-hmm.
The five takeaways, including a touchdown, 30 punts. 30 mm-hmm. punts. So yeah, that you're getting off the field, and you look at some of the sack yardage and for San Francisco against Carolina, they had 7 sacks for 56 yards. Against Seattle, they had 5 sacks for 41 yards. So I mean, it's a field position thing that's huge. You know, and a lot of times they averaged against the Rams, they averaged 30 yards. 10 yards per sack. So that is it's a big play, and it just, you know, kind of bleeds into this conversation. I know we're going to go to the callers, but, you know, they always talk about how you can't have enough pass rushers, and I know John Schneider says that all the time, and this is why, man. If you can get to the quarterback, and when you can't, just like you said, Bob, I mean, quarterbacks are good enough in the NFL that if you give them time, you know, it's like going into a 7-on-7 period where there's no defensive line or no offensive line. That drill is set up for the offense to win. They're going to win every time because, you know, you don't get the pass rush part of it. And it, going back, that 2013 team, that was the only time I ever saw an opposing defense win in practice in 7-on-7.
Really?
You had Russell, like, in his second year, mm-hmm. so it wasn't great. But they were just shutting people down because you had Earl and you had Cam. And I think Maxwell was the corner on the other side of Sherman.
Byron Maxwell, yeah.
Yeah, and they were just shutting offenses down. And so, but, yeah, that's something that you – that's why it's so important. So my point is that, you know, if the quarterback's back there patting the ball, waiting for guys to come open with no defensive pass rush, you're going to complete passes, and to your point, you know, you can only cover them for so long. So, yeah, sacks, pass rush, sacks, it's huge.
So what do they do? And this is where we want the callers to get involved. 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776. A couple of guys that you count on, that you look at and say, there are pass rush right there. These two guys, talking about Jadeveon Clowney and Jaren Reed, who Jim wrote about. You can see the article at 710sports.com.
Where?
710sports.com. That's where you find all the good stuff. But these are two guys that were there in a year where you struggled. 28 sacks. Now, Reed missed 6 games because of the suspension. Clowney missed some games and then played hurt. So you didn't get them for a full 16 games each. But would you have 43 sacks last year and you had 28 this year? I mean, that's a massive drop-off. So you feel like, yeah, I want these guys back, but at what price? Let's call it the numbers that we saw Reed respond to. Would you pay...
thought he was being sold short at 8 to 10
disrespectful.
Million. Yeah, disrespectful.
Would you pay Reed over 10? Let's say Reed wants 13 million. I'm just throwing that out there. He clearly doesn't want 8 to 10. He said on Twitter that's disrespectful. If he wants more than 10 million, do you keep Reed or do you dump him? If you're John Schneider and Clowney, same thing. His range was what I think it said, 18 to 20 or 19 to 21 was his range. So let's say he wants more than $21 million a year. You keep Clowney or dump him? Between those two guys, you had 5 sacks this year.
I think you got to, and I think you got to get better on the back end to help that. What was the point that or the amount that Reed seemed to think was disrespectful?
Eight to 10 million.
8 to 10?
Oof. So if he thinks that's disrespectful, then you wouldn't think 11 would be respectful in his mind. And so he's probably looking 12, 13, 14, 15.
That's too much.
So
I'll answer that question right now. I'd dump him. I know you need the help. Even with him, you need the help.
But once again, do you go back into John Schneider's backyard?
Go to the tree.
Pick a defensive tackle off the defensive tackle tree. Where do you get guys to replace that? And I, you know, not replacing him much from this year. But there's also leadership factor there. There's also how he plays the run. And, you know, and there's also what we heard from him and from Quentin Jefferson was that for most of the season, they didn't turn those guys loose. You know, so there's a difference in when you're playing the run first and taking care of your gap. Because in order to get upfield, you have to turn your shoulder sideways. You know, a lot mm-hmm. of times it's not, you know, you're keeping your shoulders square to the line of scrimmage. You're playing the block. Oh, okay. It's not a run play. I have my gap. Now I'm going to rush in my gap. You know, when you get those kinds of things, you're a pass rush, you're pinning your ears back and they're sending you after the quarterback, man, you're going to be doing all kinds of things that are unsound as far as run gap goes. So you're going to be sometimes taking a wide angle or sometimes, you know, a spin move or whatever, and you're just trying to get upfield. And they didn't do a lot of that this year. And that might be part of it. It also might be that the coverage sometimes wasn't great and they gave up lots of yards. So, you know, maybe they see something in Reed that they do pay him that top-end money, and same thing with Clowney, and then they add somebody else and, you know, maybe it's a totally different deal. I could see him getting back to at least their average, you know, 40 sacks.
What do you guys do? We set the numbers. These are hypothetical numbers, but let's just top-end both those ranges that were tweeted out to Jaron Reed from The Athletic. $20 million for Clowney, $10 million for Reed. They both want more than that. Keep them or dump them. What do you do? 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Let's start with Tim in Tacoma. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, you guys. If you can get a bargain basement money, sure, hold them. But, you know, they're not worth – Clowney's not worth $20,000 right now. He's – or $20 million right now. He's hurt. And Reed, how old's Reed? Is he like in his mid-30s, early 30s?
Reed? No. This is the end of his rookie deal.
Oh, okay. Well, he's still not a $10 million guy. I mean, you know what? There's a million guys. There's a million draft choices out there waiting to come in and compete, which is what Pete likes to do, you know.
So you dump them both.
They didn't get any sacks. Also, they got ran on, as I recall. Did they not? I mean, this is just not a one problem we got to solve. They were not as sterling as they have been in the past.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Tim here. Tim, I feel the same way. I'm kind of going, well, okay, you're going to pay Clowney $20 million, and we know how disruptive he can be both in the passing game and with the run defense. But, boy, you look at the team statistically, they weren't good against the run overall. And then we've already talked about the lack of sacks, and Clowney was a big part of that for 14 games.
Yeah, in defense of Clowney, I would say, again, playing with the injury that he did, as disruptive as he was, didn't result in sacks. He had three, but he had, I think, four forced fumbles, a pick six. I mean, he had other areas where he had direct disruptive impact. Reed, you look at it and you go, man, he had a sack and a half in each of his first 2 years, and then 10 and a half, and then two. So where's the real Jaron Reed? I think it's probably better than two, but nowhere near 10 and a half in terms of what you could expect moving forward.
Yeah, maybe not. Was he a second-round draft choice?
Second round.
Yeah,
second
round,
49th
pick.
If I recall. Yeah. He's 20,
just
27.
Turned 27 in December.
Well, the only thing I would disagree with Tim on is, you know, he said there's a million guys out there in the draft. Well, you know, I mean, maybe. To me, the draft is a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't say that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are bad evaluators, because, and I don't want to continue to go back to Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson, okay, Bobby Wagner, I mean, some of the guys that they've gotten in the fifth round, fourth round, KJ,
yeah, KJ, right.
Bobby was a second rounder and everything.
Richard Sherman.
But, you know, maybe you go out there and get LJ Collier, you know, and we'll see. I mean, look, the verdict is out on him, and he's going to get a chance to prove that he was a first round draft choice coming into this year. But there was a lot of people, your buddy Baldinger also, you know, thought LJ Collier was a great pick at that point, and
looked at
his evaluation of him and said he had heavy hands, he had a good array of different pass moves. Look, he didn't do anything this year.
Three tackles.
Yeah, and
three tackles.
Let's see what he can do with a training camp, though.
Yeah, maybe he's – I'm not writing him off.
I always go back to what Dave says about Rasheem Green, too. I wasn't that sold on him. He looked great in August of last year, and then we didn't see much from him the rest of the season, and he's blossomed a little bit this year.
Yeah, and again, I'm using my experience, but I think you see it a lot with second-year players where you come back and it's just – it's totally different. I mean, I was running down on kickoffs. I would say – like I remember Rusty Tillman telling me one time that my grandmother can tackle better than you. And, yeah, that wasn't –
that's inspiring.
That was not fun, hearing that in front of my, you know, fellow – and I was a rookie. And then getting out on the field, I was just lost all the time. I came back in my second year. I think I had over 100 tackles, had a couple of sacks. I mean, it was just a totally different year. Totally different
Hopefully
year.
Hopefully that goes that way for Collier.
I'm really hoping that that's the case. And I think, you know, if you ask most players, that they'll say, yeah, that second year is when it really made a difference. But look, I'm with you guys. I just, you can't argue with the fact that I don't want to say he's a flop because we don't know yet, but that was definitely not the performance that you wanted out of your first-round draft choice.
No, he was hardly active, and when he was, it was ineffectual. I mean, he had no impact, none whatsoever. So,
what do you have, like three tackles?
Three tackles.
Doesn't that make you less confident that you can go out to the draft?
To the defensive line tree?
Yeah. Well, and like, you know, and Tim was saying, I mean, it's a good point. I just, you know, there's a million guys out there and, yeah, you know, there's some. I mean, there's always a surprise guy.
Yeah.
You know, I was just talking about Matthew Judon with the professor. He's the Ravens outside, you know, pass rusher in their 3-4 defense. And, you know, he's from, what did I say, Saginaw State?
Grand Canyon.
Grand Valley State, yeah. I think. And the guy's about to get paid. And he has 24 sacks in the league. He had 9.5 last year. So, yeah, maybe you get a guy in the fifth round or something like that. You know, I remember Michael Bennett. I think he was a fifth rounder. And they brought him in here and they cut him.
And they let him go, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, what are you doing? That didn't make any sense. He goes to Tampa Bay, balls out, comes back here, and was a huge part of that
defense.
They
got him at a bargain, him and Cliff both.
Yeah.
That was huge. That was. Yeah. I think we underestimate how big that was to get those guys – as productive as they were at the price that they
were.
Like
back-to-back days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you got the one signing, you thought, oh, that's great that they upgraded, and then you got the next one after that. I'd be inclined to move on from Reed and do what you're saying. Keep Clowney and then hopefully bring in a guy like Judon or somebody else that's going to make Clowney more effective where you can't double-team him all the time.
Couple lines open, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Let's head to SeaTac. Jeff is with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. I would I'd lean towards keeping Clowney. I would offer him about 20 or 21. I feel like even if another team like Carolina or Atlanta were to beat that number by a little bit, I still think he would give us the hometown discount to stay here. He loves it here. We're a contender now, so I would offer him 20. And then Jerron Reed, I would just be ready to move on from him. I think that you know, I would much rather spend that, you know, $10 million on one of these corners that are available in free agency, a right tackle, since we'll probably lose a Fetty. And then as far as, you know, getting more help on the defensive line, John and Pete have to draft a first round talent in the first round. I understand that, you know, they like to win get these grand slams and draft people like Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner late and make these great moves, but it just hasn't happened lately. So just once, I would love for them to go out and get a first-round talent in the first round. If you like a first-round talent, I mean, if you like a third-round talent, they can draft them in the third round. I just wish that mainly they spend a first-round pick on somebody who is anticipated to go in the first round.
Right. Appreciate the call, Jeff.
Yeah, I appreciate it, too. How do you explain that?
Part of the problem is they draft so low in the first round because they're so good every year.
Right.
Yeah, but you see guys that are second, third-round picks that have impacts for other teams. We were looking at that a little bit. What they've been great at identifying is guys that are veterans that aren't superstars, but they bring them here and they're productive. And I'm talking like Tony McDaniel and Ataba Rubin and Jason Jones and all that. They just seem to – Clinton McDonald.
It seems to me like if you moved on from Reed that you could get guys like what you're talking about at a cheaper price, and maybe they aren't Jerron Reed, they're not sensational, but they're good enough to hold down the fort and –
yeah,
and then pay some more money on getting a defensive end that can help Clowney out with rushing the quarterback.
I just think there's a huge difference between getting
difference,
Dave. Palmer, yeah, a top 10 pick versus the latter part.
Oh yeah,
I mean, if you can, and that's what where Bosa came from, because the Niners and whoever this kid is, Chase Daniels, is that
Chase
his name?
Young.
Chase Young, the kid from Ohio State. I mean, some guys are saying this is the best prospect I've seen in, you know, 10 years. The guy, he makes pass rushing look easy and enjoyable. So enjoyable for
really
the
enjoys
fan.
It. Out to Bellevue, Matt is with us. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. What do you got? Who are you keeping? Who are you letting go? Or are you keeping them both, you know, and letting them both go? What are you doing?
I'm keeping Clowney. That guy is a game breaker. He's a game wrecker. He didn't quite have the stats this year. But just like you were talking about, Nick Bosa, those guys, they changed the whole team, right? And somebody like Clowney, you got to keep around, even with the risk of the injury and the fact that the stats weren't there this year. Reed, he hurt the team in more ways than one this year. You know, not only his performance on the field, but the fact that he wasn't available, and availability is the most important thing, as you guys have talked about before. And lastly, just laughing about the thought of Chase Daniels rushing people off the edge. Who's he a backup quarterback for now?
The quarterback.
Yeah, you knew who I meant, though, right, Matt?
I knew who you meant, but it's a funny picture in my head, so thank you for that.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the phone call. That opens up a line, 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776.
Shouldn't we know the greatest prospect in history? Shouldn't we know his name? I'm lumping you guys in with it, too.
We should all know the name.
You corrected me. Thanks. Yeah. Well, the only thing I would disagree with Matt on is that Jaren Reed didn't hurt them while he was on the field.
Nah, he just didn't have the impact you wanted him to have or expected him to have based on the season he had previous.
I mean, him having two sacks and, you know, the plays that he made, batted down a couple of passes, that didn't hurt them, definitely. And I think he's a good player. It's just a matter of, you know, look at what price. And then that's always the question. It just seems to me like Jaren Reed is one of those guys that is probably going to want that respect. You know, since he's already talking about it, it seems like maybe he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. You know how we were kind of talking about, well, now that Sherm and Earl are gone, like who's the guy that kind of has a little bit of an edge? I don't know. But also, you know, I know that that they really like him and that like the D-line likes him and they have stuff at his house. So maybe that's, you know, a good edge to have that, you know, you got a little bit of an attitude. Why not?
All right, we got packed phone lines right now. So Joel, John, Paul, Tim, Mark, Bruce, all you guys, hang tight. We are going to get to your phone calls. We'll continue with your thoughts, get your take on who should go, who should stay. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
You know who this is, Jim?
The Who? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
No.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dave.
Arnold Horseshack.
Dave.
You know who that is?
Yeah, from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Cheap Trick.
There you go. Dave. Can't get one by him.
No, you can't.
We'll just continue with you.
You get them all by me, though.
How many of our listeners know
Welcome Back, Kotter?
Who Arnold Horseshack is?
Not many, I'm guessing.
You got to be the same. Be at least 50.
The same guys that got Larry Walker's.
That show was in reruns.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we watched it when it was in prime time.
John Travolta.
You were watching it live every week, waiting for the next episode.
My black and white.
Freddie Boom Boom Washington.
What was his line? Character. He had a line. Was it, hey there, or something like that?
Can't remember.
Didn't he?
Text it in. 710-7. Yeah,
well, Travolta was on that show, too. Wasn't
he? Sure was.
Barbarino. Yeah.
And Gabe Kaplan?
Gabe Kaplan, yeah. Mr. Katia. Yeah. All right, couple lines open for you. 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776. We've identified a couple of players that are free agents. They possess talents that this team desperately needs, although you had both their talents this year. And between the two of them, they came away with 5 combined sacks, and we could chalk up the reasons why, games missed, injuries and whatnot. But Clowney and Jaren Reed. Do you keep them or dump them? And we're assuming that they're going to get paid the top end of what their range is, what we've seen in terms of their range. For Reed, his range was $8 to $10 million a year. For Clowney, it was either 18 to 20 or 19 to 21, right in there. So let's assume the Seahawks offer him the top end of both of those, 21 and 10, and they both go, nope, not enough. Do you up your price for one of them, both of them, or you tell them both to kick rocks? What do you do? So let's head out to who's been waiting the longest. Joel in Seattle's been waiting patiently. Joel, welcome to the show. What do you got, man?
Hey guys, I think we've got to get Clowney back. Like I saw a couple of games in person this year, watched all of them on TV, and like that guy is an animal. And you know, as you were going through like the pick six, the forced fumbles, like the guy showed up everywhere. If he needs a little more than market, if it's like a little shorter contract, if it's a little more signing bonus, like whatever it is to close that one, we've got to close that one because that guy is a menace. But with Reed, I'm not quite so sure. Like, you know, we're talking about the draft, but like, what about the free agent market for tackles? We've seen Schneider go to the defensive tackle tree and get us the Al Woods, the Tuba Rubens. Like, we find run stuffers all over the place. And so the question really is, you know, like Jim was saying, like, is he really that 10-sack guy or is he more like a 2-sack guy? Because
you know. And so the thing I was wondering about with him is, like, maybe do we franchise tag him? Like, what's a franchise tag for a defensive tackle worth these days?
John said Clayton told us it'd be somewhere 14 to 15 million, which I don't think they're going to be comfortable with. And you can't spread any of that out, by the way. If you franchise tag somebody, that 15 million, 14, whatever it is, hits your cap. Whereas you sign a long-term deal, you spread it all out. You can manipulate the salary cap so it doesn't kill your budget.
No, we can't. No way that's going to work. But I wonder if there's a possibility that we could franchise tag him and then trade him. Like, figure out some way to get value from him, as opposed to just letting him walk. But, like,
or you could try the transition tag too, where it was cheaper last year. It was like $12 million for defensive tackles. Maybe it's 12 to 13 this year. I don't know if they'd want to go that high. And then you'd have the opportunity, if someone offered him a contract elsewhere, that you could match that and have him back.
Yeah, you know what I found?
Appreciate the phone call, Jill. Opens up a line 421-3776, toll free 866-979-3776.
I find the more that, you know, people are saying he's not worth it, the more I'm kind of pushing back that, you know, okay, compared to what? You know, that's the other thing. And also the fact that it's just, you know, it's difficult to evaluate those guys and their value. Now, obviously, you can look at the numbers, but that's not a place where you're going to see ridiculous numbers.
Right. How much better is he in your mind, just visually to your eye, than the guys we mentioned that they've just had a knack of bringing in? Not superstars, but Al Woods and Tony McDaniel and Jason Jones and Ataba Rubin and Clinton McDonald.
Well, those guys are different. They're run stoppers, you know, mostly. I mean, look, what did Al Woods, I think, in, what, 9 years, 10 years, he's had like 3 sacks, mm-hmm. 4 sacks. I mean, those guys aren't getting sacks at all.
Yeah, they're like a Brandon Mebane, right? You're there to be double teamed, hopefully, and, oh, boy.
Yeah, that's problematic there. Yeah, so anyway, that's something, you know, I think is a different animal. Keep turning off my button because I'm
trying to wipe off the spill there.
I'm not supposed to have this.
All right. Let's go to a phone call. We're going to go back to the phone lines while we clean up the mess in here. Out to Fife. Mark is with us. Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man. What do you think?
I think Clowney, for sure, without a doubt, he's the only guy on the team that can disrupt the game like he did at San Francisco. You don't find those guys, you know, come around your house very often. So I think that's a no-brainer. And Reed, I could go either way. But I think the bigger issue in my mind is the type of defense that's being called behind them. So it's not just the linemen. A great defensive line can hide a lot of hills in the back, you know, the back part of the defense.
Right.
And so I'm tired of seeing a zone where they drop back. And I thought a zone was to take your man as you cross the zone, but we just kind of let him go by us.
Yeah.
Over the top.
Yeah. And appreciate the phone call, Mark. I want to try to get as many people as we can here. And that's something Dave's talked about, just level of trust in the guys that you've got back there, right? If you don't trust their ability to stick with their guy, you're going to give them the cushion gets bigger, right?
Yeah.
Keep everything in front of you. Keep it all in front of you. If that means we're now 10 yards off of you as opposed to 5 or right up on you, whatever. The further back, see, I look at it as the further back they are, the less trust they have.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is I just have always felt like if you play zone, it's not necessarily passive. If you match up, you try to match up a little bit more, and then just the pattern progression of the guys that you crowd, you know, and where you move in that zone. And that's why I'm so big on Cody Barton. Because he has a really good understanding of which guy to look at and how to crowd receivers. And just dropping back and turning around and covering a piece of turf just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, that – and I saw a fair amount of that, I feel like. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not sure if that zone defense – it's just more how they're playing it.
Right.
And, look, the two are connected. I mean, the coverage – is definitely, and that's what we saw in that 49er game when they got the five sacks, and that was the first time they ever had any kind of explosion of sacks. The coverage was so good. I mean, the linebackers were dropping underneath those underneath routes, and I thought they were going to be doomed because coming off that Tampa Bay game, do you remember looking at those plays on
yes.
after that? You know, those
Jameis
guys,
Winston picked them apart.
Yeah, it was wide, guys were wide open. So, you know, that can be fixed, I think, but Yeah, as far as getting a talented guy, just think a guy like Jaron Reed, the more we talk about it, he's not like those other guys, Ataba Rubin. He is a guy that actually can really pass, you know, rush the passer. And to have that, just think about it. How many guys around the league, you know, and I know he only got two sacks, but how many guys around the league that play that inside position get double-digit sacks, which he did last year?
Right. Let's see. Bruce in Tacoma has been waiting. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yeah, guys. You got to keep Clowney. He's just a one-of-a-kind kind of player. Reed, I think, I don't know if he can do structure incentive-laden contracts in football like they do in baseball, but I would try to prove it on him with incentives for sacks. But you're really not addressing what the biggest defensive problem I saw all year, and it was discussed in the middle of the season, was the yak yardage that was taking place over the middle. And I know that's Bobby's territory, and he's not a coverage guy, but you got to do something better. And I put that on the coaching staff. I'm sorry. They've got enough players that they could have done something better there. I think a couple of our losses this year, I would really attribute to the defensive play calling and alignment
right.
And that sort of thing.
Appreciate the phone call, Bruce.
Well, it's fair to bring that up. I think Ken Norton should be on a hot seat, but, you know, I mean,
it should be looked at.
Yeah, it's if you like so many of these players and you start thinking about it, you like Clowney, you like Reed, you like all the linebackers. Boy, you just rave all the time about Kendricks and Wagner and K.J. Wright. And then you like McDougal. You like Diggs. I mean, you like all these guys. Well, if you like them that much, why weren't they better? If they're that good, then it's got to be a coaching issue.
Yeah, quickly, one more before the break. Chris in Puyallup is with us. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, well, my take, you got to get rid of them both. You know, because you sit there and you look at Clowney, no argument, he's a beast, you know, he's disruptive, really like the guy, but if you go back, he's been out of games every year. Houston, he's never really delivered for Houston as he was expected to when he came out of college, and if you want to talk about paying $18, $21 million for a guy that's never really met expectations, I think we're going down the wrong path there. And Reed, what was Reed's thing? He missed games this year because of PEDs, or was it?
No, he had a domestic incident, so it was a 6-game suspension.
Okay, so that's kind of selfish, right? So if you look at the Legion of Boom, did you have guys like that missed because of behavior problems and because of injuries like that? I mean, sure, Thomas got hurt, you know, because his leg got broke, stuff like that. But
yeah, Brandon Browner did.
And then Richard got out of his.
Yeah, he had the Adderall thing that he.
So yeah, so my point is, did Clowney ever really deliver other than just a couple of games a year? So I'll hang up and listen to the conversation.
All right, I appreciate your phone call. And that's a lot of what we talked about when he got here was, you know, there was a lot of hype and excitement and expectation and.
I
remember being the stick in the mud going, well, hang on, let's not get crazy here and expect here's a 14 sacks and 15 sacks. He's never done it. And he had J.J. Watt on the other side. But I think we had a different – I'll speak for me. I had a different appreciation after watching a season of him, understanding he didn't play every game. He missed a couple of games due to injury and played a couple of games injured and who knows how compromised. But you saw the impact he had, even though it didn't result in a sack every time. And you saw 4 forced fumbles, and you saw the pick six. You saw him being triple-teamed at times, them isolating moments where he's triple-teamed. So he's drawing that attention. He can't do it alone. You need the other guy. If he's being triple-teamed, somebody's got to be free. Somebody's got to get to the quarterback.
Well, and who do you bring in for him? I mean, you obviously need pass rush.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's willing to be more reasonable. He's not talking about respect and things like that. He's talking about being with a winner.
When he made the comment about, I'm not just going to go play for some you know, garbage team for a paycheck. I'm not doing that. He understands. Yeah. It sounds like he understands, I'm going to make a lot of money somewhere. Yeah. I want to play for a winner.
Well, I was just looking at it, at the 28 sacks we all know about, but only 19 and a half of those 28 sacks came from your defensive linemen because you got 3 apiece from Kendricks and Wagner. You got Trey Flowers, 2 sacks, McDougal with half a sack. So, it was just, we know, we saw it all. It was terrible.
Apologize to those of you hanging on that we didn't get to. We'll open up the phone lines more often as we continue with this. But meanwhile, there was a brawl at the end of the Kansas State basketball game last night. sat there and watched that video. We got to have a few thoughts to share on this little melee. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
There was a brawl last night in college basketball.
Yeah.
There was it was a melee. It was a real Donnybrook.
Did we see that many punches being thrown and
no,
connecting? I still haven't seen the guy with a chair over his head. Maybe I'm getting
we were watching
video.
That during the break. You didn't see that?
No, I did not see
he,
that.
Did somebody yank it out of his hands? He had it like cocked behind his head like he was going to swing it. And it looked like maybe somebody pulled it from behind him.
The assistant coach took it away from him.
Okay, yeah.
Who hits somebody with a chair?
I don't.
Is this a bar brawl scene from the old westerns?
Yeah, well, you're going to break it over their head. I mean, who grabs a chair? Why do you?
WWE.
Oh, yeah.
You see that all the time. In fact, where they have tables, sure. Ladders, and chairs or whatever, they've got that.
It's not my sport. I don't know. But you know what the problem is? You know what it is? People don't know how to fight. So they think, let me grab something to hit somebody with.
Maybe.
My fist isn't good enough. I don't really know how to use these. Sort of like Stephen A. Smith in that video I tweeted out earlier at Bob Stelton, if you want to see his skills.
You don't think he looks like much of a fighter?
He looks like he'd get tuned up in a matter of seconds. But I think that's part of it, is that, you know, there's a lot of bravado. There's a lot of chest thumping and puffing up and big muscular guys. And then when you see them try to fight, they look like they've got no clue in their head. So I think a reaction for a lot of those people, let me just grab something to hit somebody with.
I don't know, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's very strange. You know, whenever you think about, I guess, fights that it's not like I witnessed any, but I remember in 2004, because my kids were pretty young, and we were watching that highlights of that basketball game at the Palace in Detroit.
Oh, the Malice at the Palace?
Yeah. When Artest went up in the crowd, and I remember it being kind of scary, a little bit scary, because, you know, I was thinking, gosh, what if you were there with your kids and all that stuff went down?
Yeah, and the brave guy that threw the cup at him as soon as he ran to the crowd got all
So then Artest went up into the crowd and
grabbed the wrong guy.
It reminded me of, I don't know if you've ever seen Slapshot.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Hanson brothers, they get hit with a set of keys.
Which one is it? No, not that
guy. He's beating the heck out of this guy. And they're like, no, it's him. So he goes over and starts beating him up.
No,
I thought that's what Artest was going to do. But
he did grab the wrong guy.
Yeah.
The guy that threw the cup came out unscathed like the true coward that he was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was kind of scary. I remember Ben Wallace was on that team, too.
Yeah.
Ben Wallace is like 6'10", and I read a story. He bench presses 410.
He was an imposing-looking dude.
And the reason why that's so impressive to me,
arms.
Over 400 pounds is always, you know, a big number. But, yeah, he's got, you know, the arms of a 7-foot man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's just this big monster of a guy, and thought, man, he could do a lot of damage. You know, if he knew how to fight. And I don't know if he does or not. But, yeah, this whole thing. Let me ask this, though. When the Jayhawks are trying to dribble it out, right?
Yeah,
so
there's
81-59.
Yeah, and they're getting killed by 22.
There's 8 seconds left.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the guys just kind of stand there. Well, the Kansas State guy comes and swipes it and goes down and tries to make a layup.
Yeah.
So is that a Bush League move? Or if you're Kansas, why don't you just protect the ball and make sure that doesn't happen? And if the guy does steal it, you know, I get going down there and trying to swat it away, but, you know, was that a cheesy move, do you think?
I don't think so.
Just by the Kansas State guy to steal it?
7 seconds left and you're trailing by 22?
Yeah, well, I just put myself in the shoes of the players on defense thinking, you know what, you're not going to dribble this out in front of me.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean,
I understand why it would be a Bush League
though.
Move, why some would consider that, but I'm just talking on the players' behalf.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, man, we're down 22 points. I know that the game is over and we have no chance, but I'm not going to stand here and watch that guy just dribble in front of me.
Yeah, and you're not going to stop playing defense and not stop doing what you're doing. And, I mean, if you just go to the most basic thing, you play in between when the clock starts and when it ends, and it hadn't ended yet. So, to me, I guess I don't know if I would do that or not, but I don't think it's that much of a chump move. Now, the Kansas guy going down and blocking it was awesome because now all of a sudden it's on, right? I mean, oh, okay, you're going to do this. Well, I'm going to do this. But then he stood over the guy, and then the whole thing just
then
you know,
all hell
blew
broke
up
loose
from there.
Well, the worst part, going into the stands, you just can't have that. I mean, if you just keep it on the court there, but and then there was a fan that got involved too, it appeared.
Was there? It was hard to tell. I mean,
yeah,
it spread.
A black shirt.
You know, there was a lot of pushing and shoving and grabbing and holding back, and I didn't see anybody truly get hit with a punch. I'm sure maybe in the middle of all of it. I mean, because there were, looked like there were 50 people involved, so it's hard to keep track of.
Can we hear the play-by-play of the brawl here? That looks interesting.
Did I have that on the sheet? Let me see. I didn't see the I didn't look for that sound, but
I heard it earlier. It was something like,
oh, here you go.
I don't like that.
All right, here you
That's
go.
That's not good.
And a block to finish. And DeSosa blocks it, and now the bench is empty. Just unnecessary.
Yep. That's not good.
This is a punt call. This is bad.
This is
no. No good. Oh, this is terrible.
There are going to be ramifications for this going forward.
And it's just no point to it.
That guy was terrible doing the play-by-play of
no
the brawl.
No good.
Kevin Harlan would have done a lot better job on that.
And he picks up a chair.
I know.
From behind.
Well, I know. Why? I mean, he's on radio.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was on TV.
I like that.
Know.
No. No, this is no good. And here's Bill Self. You know Bill Self, Jim?
Yeah, the Kansas coach.
Yeah, here he is after talking about that situation.
I didn't even know that it was a melee until, you know, 3 or 4 seconds after everybody was out there because, you know, sometimes those things kind of start and then they just kind of dissolve. But yeah, that was an embarrassment on our part for the role that we played in it. And there will be consequences that I'm sure I'll announce tomorrow. For that role, it's as soon as I'm able to study it and come to grips with all of it.
Yeah. Well, the main guy, Silvio D'Souza, he got a 12-game suspension today by the Big 12.
The main guy, the one that
blocked the shot and stood
over him?
Oh, was he the chair guy?
I think so.
The chair guy. Is that going to be his name moving forward?
Yeah, sure.
Chair guy.
Well, I'm looking at the end of that. The officials came over to the bench area, and we're looking at a replay, and they're writing down numbers, right? You know, jersey numbers of who to suspend. You know, there was the plain clothes guy, the one thing I saw. I think I'm trying to remember who the NBA coach was.
The plain clothes guy, the chair guy. They all have their name.
But remember the NBA coach that was in a suit, and he went running out to break up a fight and then slipped and fell underneath? That might have been.
Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah, was that
when he was hanging on to Alonzo Mourning's leg like Chicken Little out there?
Right.
Yeah, it was Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning.
It looked like that happened here too. There was a shot where a coach comes flying in a suit, and then he slips and falls down. And I mean, it was just it was hard to tell what was going on. But you know, at the end, I think they had a guy down on the ground. That's the thing where you see a couple of people come over, and you're like, are they trying to kick him? Or it gets ugly. And then I think Mora was saying that. Was this like a disabled
ESPN reported, that area. There was a section for disabled fans with disabilities right near there. So that's scary as well.
Yeah. So tempers run hot in these situations. But, you know, the thing is, you got to be careful of like that's going to be on film for forever. And if you're the chair guy, you know, and
you can't be the chair guy.
You clock somebody with that. I mean,
yeah, silly. Just
I think the point
absurd.
Of all this is don't be the chair guy.
Yeah, don't be the chair guy. Don't do that. All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
You know what? It is great to learn. And we learn every day on this show. What did we learn today, though, Maura?
We learned that Jim Moore dreads coming back from break.
You ever wanted to know what dread sounds like, Dave? You just heard it a moment ago from Jim.
What was that about?
What are you talking about? I just repeated DJ. He gave us the 30-second.
Well, we're talking about
morning.
The numbnuts here that wants us to talk about hockey, like Bob said. There's no players, there's no coach, there's no mascot. It's 2 years away or
and
whatever,
no
2021.
Name. But hey, let's break it down.
Yeah.
But when are they going to name that team anyway? Talk about just lengthening the thing out. Let's go. Let's go with the Kraken and get it over with.
But anyway, we're sitting there having this conversation, and then DJ says, 30 seconds, and then Jim just says, 30 seconds.
No, it was more like, 30 seconds. I can't wait to talk about what we're talking about.
No, certainly like, not.
You guys suck as teammates.
listen to us in unison. No, no.
Well, like, one of the things... like Dave's over there, Mr. Cheery. Hey, 30 seconds. Can't wait.
Oh, Jim, you're being a bad teammate. I like when Jim starts talking about teamwork and teammates. That's when you know it's all a bunch of BS.
Jim,
nobody throws people under the bus more than Jim.
Yeah,
and yet nobody invokes the
not true.
"You're being a bad teammate" clause.
He looked at me for confirmation that that's not true.
More than anyone.
That Jim, that was funny though.
What?
Because we had been talking. I can't remember what we were talking about. We had this conversation going. You weren't saying a word. And then DJ just gives us 30 seconds. And you just go, 30 seconds. It was the only thing you said. Well, it was so
It's
down.
The only time I've ever said that. And I was actually looking forward to the next segment because it was about Nick Rolovich.
Okay.
I was going to say, I will support him on that. I'm pretty sure he was excited for that segment.
His tone said otherwise.
Thank you. But better teammate behind the glass there, Laura Dooley.
There we go with the teammate.
DJ loves me too. Thanks, DJ.
I love you, Jim. I thought it was hilarious. Okay. I thought it was very funny.
What else did we learn?
Right, Jim's driving the ship now.
Jim's done with this topic. What's next?
We learned that a plumber, Dave Wyman, is not.
I was listening to the Cougar Coaches Show last night as I was furiously driving to Home Depot to pick up plumber's putty.
Your home project.
By the way, Bob, it failed.
Did it?
Miserably, yeah.
It might be worth it just to pay somebody. And
apparently, I'm not very good at installing sinks.
Get that grief off your table. You don't need that stress. Some things are just worth the price, man, just to eliminate stress out of your life. That's why I pay for parking, because I don't want to circle the block.
You know what's disturbing for me is that I do all these home project things, and I've been failing at a high rate lately, and you feel like you should get better.
Now
I'm getting worse.
You're doing bigger projects, though.
I'm getting worse.
They're becoming bigger projects.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You're changing light bulbs here. Come on.
I'll give you some positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
You built that fence with your son, and it turned out well, didn't it?
Yeah, the fence went okay.
Okay.
But am I right? These are a little more involved, these projects you're taking on?
You're being a good teammate, Jim.
That's right.
Yeah, a little bit more involved. I mean, no, not really. I mean, I didn't install the whole sink. I put the faucet in there with the handles and then the plug thing, and then you got to do the drain that comes up through the bottom, and I think the bottom of the porcelain has a chip in it or something, maybe. That's why it's leaking. Or it could be that I'm just a moron. That might be the problem.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So what's the next step? You addressed it all last...
Call a plumber.
Okay.
I'm calling my guy,
we
Alberto.
We had a texter. Yeah, we had a texter offer to help you that was a plumber.
Yeah, Derek, he said, I got my guy Alberto, so yeah, we're good.
Yeah, sometimes I get not wanting to pay the price because it can be spendy, but sometimes it's just worth knowing it's going to get done right the first time. You don't have to hassle with it. There's no frustration of sitting under a sink yelling
totally
obscenities.
True. Totally true. And then a couple of times I hit my head.
Yeah.
I was having to lay underneath the cabinet, and then I would get up too fast and hit my head. And there's lots of cursing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm with you. I get irrational in moments like that, and I just go, whatever it costs, let's just get it fixed. I don't want to touch this thing again.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, they have the directions, and you'd have to be a moron to not be able to follow it. But if my desire to read the small print and everything is going down.
you just skim over it. I get how it works. I don't need to see all this fine print.
I need to get on the YouTube instructional videos.
Yeah, there you go. They've got a video for everything. What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned what Dave thought of Jim's Pro Bowl idea.
What if they had four teams of seven, you went 7-on-7 and had semifinals and then had a final between the two winning teams? Does that mean
Dave weighing in on
does that mean Dave does not like that idea at all?
Terrible.
Well, I was just trying to spice up the segment there, Dave.
I wonder how Dave felt about that idea.
7-on-7. I want more skills competition.
Was he being a bad teammate then?
Well, yeah, don't they always talk about 7-on-7 drills and stuff?
Yeah, they have, like, Bumpus didn't come to our national championship party, AFC, NFC championship party that we have every year at Dory's house because he was in a 7-on-7 league.
Mm.
Yeah, so they have kids that go around and do that. It's without helmets and everything, but I guess they could do that. I mean, there's always a chance, though, that you hurt yourself, planting or whatever. You just can't play full speed if you want to be safe. And that's where I would say that it's not a safe game.
Yeah.
And trying to make it safe is a fool's errand. So they always, you know, say that they're trying to make it safe for the players. There's no such thing as safe in football. Safe is bad football. Right? Because we see
it. Yeah, it's terrible.
The Pro Bowl is safe, and it's awful. Terrible football.
It's an awful product. But I did like your reaction to Jim's idea.
It's pretty mature, huh?
I knew really, exactly what he meant.
Yeah, really good.
Very, very clear answer there. Yeah.
You didn't have to dig too far into that one.
No.
What do you mean by that, Dave? Yeah. Is that pro or con? Yeah. I can't tell.
You know what? That comment right there should be on what we learned. Maybe we tomorrow.
What else did we learn?
That's all we learned today.
That's all we learned.
Bob just wants more and more. Every time you're like, what else? Come on. We want more.
I can't get enough.
You
I
like
told
it.
You, it's my favorite segment. I love
we'll
it.
Get to laugh
what
at
do we
each
have
other.
Tomorrow? Oh, the Mariners.
Pre-spring training luncheon.
Yeah, spring training luncheon.
Oh, you're talking about on the
show.
Yeah,
you're going to that, right?
Yeah.
Are you invited, Jim?
Are you going to be there?
I'm probably not going.
Really? You're not? You should go.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Shannon will be there.
There'll still be Bridges.
Or Insider, or MLB
well,
Insider.
Well, I'm going then.
Oh, boy.
Oh, jeez.
Let's get out of here.
Hey, Shannon
he
baked
something.
For us today.
Right.
National Blondie Brownie. I tried to.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were good.
Tomorrow's National Pie Day, and I told her, hey, I really like key lime, if you don't mind.
She's
too busy.
Yeah. Here are your chores for tonight. Here are the requests for tomorrow. All right. That does it for us. Thanks to our guest, John Clayton, for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Just hit the podcast button and click on our picture, and it's right there waiting for you. We're back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I'm protecting naked 60-year-olds.